This is a Boardwalk Audio podcast.
Hello and welcome to Duck Snort Baseball Podcast. I'm Greg Nix.
I'm Wayland McQueen.
And we are recording on Saturday morning, October 19th, just ahead of Game 6 of the ALCS, so we will not know what happens in the American League Championship Series. It could very well be over by the time you're listening to this.
Or we could have an exciting Game 7.
Yeah, I would be very interested in a Game 7 featuring the Astros, the Yankees, Gerrit Cole, going up probably against Tanaka, maybe. I don't know who would get the ball for the Yankees, but that would be interesting. So we'll get to that series in a moment, as well as recapping the Nationals and Cardinals series, demolition of the Cardinals.
Oh, wow.
And we'll also talk about Joe Maddon being announced as the new manager of the Los Angeles Angels.
Oh, according to MLB.com, it's Severino versus Cole in seven.
Oh, interesting. Okay. I didn't know that they had announced that. Well, then we will work that into our analysis coming up shortly.
Yeah.
Before we dive into anything, we want to give a shout out to Boardwalk Audio and OffTheBenchBaseball.com for their support with distribution, as always. Visit BoardwalkAudio.com for lots of great podcasts, OffTheBenchBaseball.com for postseason analysis, hot stove analysis, all the baseball analysis you want. With that said, why don't we start with this series that is going on right now, because it's the most present in our minds and in our life and in the collective unconscious space.
Unconscious space and conscious, I guess. Yeah.
I don't know. I was just trying to sound smart. I didn't know where I was going with that.
You did it.
Yeah. Don't humor me.
You tried. Is what I meant.
I did try. So as we're talking, the Astros are up 3-2. They're about to have a game that is a bullpen game, and then I guess Cole and Severino are going, if necessary, in a game seven. Kind of interesting that it's a bullpen game.
Don't
you think?
It is interesting, but I do think if the Astros feel like they can win this one, which they probably do because they're in Houston now, right?
Yeah.
I think it might make sense because now you either have Cole in seven or definitely Cole in game one of the World Series.
Yeah, I think it's probably like a worthy gamble if the goal, which the goal is to win the World Series as opposed to winning the pennant, right?
Right, yeah.
I think that makes the most sense because you want to line up Cole for game one if you possibly can. But also, like, you can't win the World Series without getting there, so maybe you want to ride your horse at every opportunity, because, like...
But then they're riding him at seven, right? Like, I think it...
I just wonder... Yeah. I mean, of course.
Yeah.
But you always... I guess you always want to avoid a game seven if you can.
No, I mean, I agree, because anything could happen.
Yeah, that would be at least the sort of, like, traditional point of view on it. But this does show how far we've come from the traditional point of view where, like, both of these teams are going with a straight bullpen game in game six of the ALCS. Like, that would have been unheard of, what, 3 years ago?
Yeah. But did you see that article? I think it was in The Ringer about how this has been the most, like, this postseason has been, like, a return to starters.
Yeah.
Like, that old strategy that we've been seeing for the last year or 4 years, or basically the Ned Yost is disappearing, or has disappeared. But also that might just be because we're looking at, like, the best pitchers.
Yeah, right. I mean, the Nationals and the Astros are sort of built on starting pitching at the very least.
Yeah.
I wonder whether it's an aberration or sort of a trend, too, because I think, like, in addition to the Nationals being having such a good starting rotation, they have a really bad bullpen, and especially the middle
right,
innings of the bullpen.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think, like, it may just be the teams that we're seeing and the way that in which they're built rather than, like, some kind of, like, shift from the trend. And I also wonder, like, how much the de-juiced ball is contributing to that, where, like...
Oh, yeah. That's interesting,
you know, we would
too.
Be seeing a lot less starting pitching innings in this if starting pitchers were giving up more home runs.
Right.
Right? Like, James Paxton in Game 5 wouldn't have gotten through six innings, maybe, if it wasn't the de-juice ball, because he gave up a couple of pretty deep drives, like, that were caught on the warning
right.
track.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point, because there should maybe have been like 10 more home runs in the postseason, or 12, or
yeah,
something
no
like
idea.
That. They had like, there was an article, I could be off on the numbers, but it was one of those things where you can figure out, like, based on how the ball has been flying and some of the deep flies that should have gone out, in quotes, but like...
Yeah, well, the analysis that I saw said the average, right, was 4.5 feet shorter on batted balls than during the regular season.
Yeah.
I'm not completely convinced there's just so many variables in that, you know, as far as like,
colder now,
it's colder, there's better pitchers, but it does seem like the ball is acting differently. And I think the way that you could tell is just like, we were all conditioned, right, to see a certain kind of swing, a certain kind of like ball path where you're like, oh, that's gone,
right?
Like all year, it's like, oh, that's gone, and then like. I mean, Paxton was a perfect example. I don't know if you watched all of Game 5, but his last out, who was it? Chirinos, maybe? Somebody, like, clobbered one, and it was, like, literally at the base of the wall.
Oh,
Brett Gardner caught it with runners on base. I was like, that's a game changer. Like,
yeah,
literally.
That
like,
could have been, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's weird if it's, I don't.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. So, I mean, obviously, the Astros are the favorite in the sense that they have a lot more room for error. Mm-hmm. But in Game 6, the middle chunk of the Yankees' bullpen, I would say, is a lot better, a lot more proven than the middle chunk of the Astros' bullpen.
Yeah.
I mean, so the Astros maybe would go with, like, Brad Peacock, Joe Smith, Chris Devensky, maybe we'll see into that game, but he's been pretty bad this year.
I mean, the Yankees definitely have the advantage in a bullpen game.
Yeah, I guess that's why I think it's interesting that the Astros are not going with Cole, because like the Yankees have such an on-paper advantage in that game. It kind of feels like you are ceding the game to them in a way.
Is this Cole's regular day of rest?
That's a great question. I think it should be, right? He started...
I think it is because of the rain out. Like, well, now we're back on track, though.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Like, I see both sides of it, but I think also it's like, I don't think that the Yankees bullpen is as infallible as maybe at the beginning of the year we thought it could be. Or, you know what? It's very good, and they have the advantage over the Astros. But I think if the Astros feel like they can jump on maybe just like two guys, they can hang in there.
Yeah.
And then also, you know, if it's 4-3 in the seventh, who says Cole doesn't come out to have three shut down?
Well, but then you're burning him for Game 7.
I mean, you got to be really confident that he could hold that lead. But
this would be Cole's regular day. He started on Tuesday, so that's 4 days in
between.
That's only 3 days in
between. Okay, so he's going on regular rest.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, I think overall I still like it, because I do think that the Astros hitters are good enough. I think that's probably what they're looking at. Like, I think if this was the Rays, you know what I mean? This is a terrible... Well, I mean, they're all bullpen, so... But if the same pitching staff, it's a terrible strategy, because I think that the Astros are banking on their offense being good enough.
Well, they're... Offense hasn't been great in this series. They've got a lot of guys struggling.
But like, that doesn't
Jordan
mean they can't.
Alvarez looks pretty awful
he's
time
been
he steps
off.
In there. To the point where I would like maybe bench him for this game.
I honestly, I rarely think this, but every time I've seen him at bat, he straight up looks nervous.
Interesting.
I mean, not like he's like his knees aren't knocking, but that look of like, I guess I've just been there before, like, and maybe I'm projecting, but like, even in our little LABF league, I've been up with like two down in a two-run game with runners on, and I've been in my head like, I wish I wasn't here.
Right, yeah,
and like,
expanding the zone and
something
stuff.
About that, I see it with... And then it's also just his swings are like...
I think he looks defeated, not nervous.
Oh, maybe that's like, what it is. Like, I he already thinks he's... Yeah.
Yeah, like, every swing he takes, it feels like he knows that he's not gonna, like, get a hold of it.
He's taking these, like, and he's taking these almost like wild swings. Yeah. Yeah, and it's, like...
Over sliders, like, down in the dirt.
But it when he does it, like, you could see on his face after, like, he knows he should, like... It's one thing to get... It doesn't even feel like he's getting fooled.
Yeah.
He is in a way, but not the way that like a good hitter gets fooled. It feels like he's just like, I don't know what I'm doing. And it's like, he knows what he's doing up there.
This is sort of the like risk of relying on rookies, right?
Yeah. It's
like Alvarez has not struggled in the majors at all. Like to the point where like, I mean, he was like unbelievable. He was sensational.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
he completely dominated in the regular season. And so like, you don't know how to adjust at that level, or at least you've never done it before, right?
So this is the first time he's facing this. And
yeah,
it's
where
the
he's having to face an adjustment and like those struggles, that's like a huge mental shift that you have to make in the highest pressure situation in which you've ever played.
But then it's just also one of those things like all he needs to do is hit one home run with two men on. It's like the Howie Kendrick thing, right? Like,
yeah, I mean, he just has to run
DS.
Into one, right?
Yeah.
But he just, I mean, like I was... In watching game five, I was kind of like, maybe you like bench him and like play both Marisnyk and Reddick or something to like try to get a better defensive alignment in the outfield, put Brantley at DH for a game or something just to like give him a breather,
use him as a
pinch hitter or something. Cause he just does not, I mean, he looks like AJ Pollock in the DS too, of like guys where it's just like, you're just not going to make contact right now. Like, something is off, and like I don't know if you're gonna fix it here in the next day or two.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. But then, yeah, it's just so tough to bench him because
he was dominant, like he was their best hitter.
But you're right; like it might give him what he needs, like to bench him. But then, when two men are on in the sixth or whatever, bring him on, and that might feel like confidence to be like, you're the guy we need right now with two.
Yeah.
Like, but also,
or maybe he'll pee his pants.
Yeah, that's
maybe he'll pee pee all over himself.
Wouldn't that be something? Just to pee pee in a game?
That'd be very relatable. I think that
I
would
guess
be
just
endearing
pool
in to
the
me.
Cup, right? It'd be endearing. You'd be like, I can relate to that.
I can relate to peeing in front of 50,000 people.
Did you see that thing you said, Reddick? Did you see that tweet? I don't remember who did it. Where there was like, if there was someone with the last name Blue Dick in the league, we wouldn't stop talking about it. But just because this guy's name is Reddick and it's not pronounced Red Dick, no one's paying attention. Oh, I wish I remembered who tweeted it, but I was like, this is great.
That's pretty good.
I do think this gives the advantage. I think that this just is the confidence that they have in Cole.
Yeah.
Like, I truly feel like they
as,
are
like,
willing to give this advantage away, just, and then they think just Cole at home in seven is like, there's, and then it's probably just their.
It's probably true.
Yeah, and it's probably their confidence of like, I don't think we can lose three games when two of them are at home, which again, they could be very wrong about,
right.
But I
yeah.
think it's just like a weird calculated confidence move where we're willing to punt here a little.
I wonder
like
if
I don't like it's risky, but then having Cole in game one against the Nationals, and then basically that means you have him in 1, 5, and 7.
Yeah.
Probably not starting seven, but that's also a huge advantage. So
right.
they are looking ahead a little bit, maybe, but
I wonder if like the clubhouse or like management is that all shook by the way that Verlander and Greinke have pitched in this series particularly, but kind of across the playoffs.
Well, like, Verlander hasn't been,
I mean, he gave up 4 runs.
But then he didn't give up anything. Did
what?
He get pulled in the game?
No, I mean, he made it through 6, but like, you know.
I mean, 4 runs is a lot.
He's not Justin Verlander like that. He's not regular season Justin Verlander this year. He's not the Verlander that won them the World Series, essentially, which I think would have been the like expectation going into the playoffs is
right.
like, you know, with these two guys, these three guys at the front of our rotation, we're unbeatable. And I mean, we've talked about that extensively, but Verlander does not look like a guy who, reputation aside, you would say like, this guy's going to give me 6 innings every time out.
And 3 or fewer, like a quality
start. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
No, he has. I would be more worried about Greinke.
For sure.
Because also Verlander, like, he went 6 and he gave up 4, but he gave up 4 and 1. Like,
yeah,
and
right.
it's home runs, which he's, I mean, I know one was a 3-run home run, but usually Usually he's given up solo shots, and you know the Astros should also score more than one run in a game.
Well, yes, this is true. I'm rooting for the Astros, I think, just because the Yankees were the Yankees. But that was actually a satisfying way for the Yankees to win, because that's exactly what we talked about on the last podcast.
That's
right?
How they're going
to
win.
Of like that short right field porch that lefties can, and like Hicks's home run was literally like down the foul line, like
hit the
off
pole.
The pole.
Yeah.
So our prognostication skills finally got one right.
And Cole won that game. That last game he pitched, but I think the Yankees exposed Cole in the way you have to, which is get his pitch count up.
Yeah, sure.
And then get to that Astros bullpen,
which like looks not rickety necessarily, but like Ryan Pressly was amazing during the regular season and has not looked great. Like Josh James hasn't looked great. Osuna's been good, I think. but like that bridge. That is where you're going to get exposed. Like basically any team is like sort of like beyond the best guy in your bullpen, especially if like your second best guy or your best guy is struggling, like that's where you're going to get exposed. Yeah. And so like that to me is still the question about the bullpen game is like, okay, well,
who are you leaning on?
Here?
Yeah. Yeah. Cause they don't. Yeah. I don't know. But going back to your Greinke thing, I think that worries me the most, cause he just hasn't looked good at all, really. I guess he kind of got it together this last game a little, but like if you're thinking that in the World Series that Greinke Corbin game, like that's at this point a huge advantage for the Nationals.
Yeah, although Corbin
he didn't look
like,
great this last game. Yeah,
well, he did look great for like four innings,
right? Yeah,
where in which he struck out like nine dudes.
Yeah,
and then inning five he got into a ton of trouble. Yeah, he's been really up and down, basically, like at either end of the spectrum, like either dominant or like
or
can't
like,
get a guy out.
Yeah.
And like, I
it's
guess.
It's like you, Darvish, this year for the Cubs.
Yeah. I guess, like, yeah. So if I guess you'd rather have the guy who like looks dominant than the guy who like is maybe going to give up three or four runs over five innings.
Well.
But like, also, Corbin could give up eight runs in.
So,
a third of an inning.
I mean, we
like
could have like
relief,
a
you know?
Greinke Corbin game that in the first three innings is
a shootout,
is a shutout, and then all of a sudden it's 7-6 after five.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I'm looking at the Astros bullpen and like kind of seeing who they got, who they can go to that we haven't seen much of. I think you know, we'll see Hector Rondon. Mm. We'll probably see Pressly. Will Harris had a very good year. Yeah. We haven't really seen him at all.
I think they're going to avoid Devinsky if they can.
You think so?
He just hasn't looked great. I mean, they might have to put him in there, but I don't think that they want to rely on him as like a two-inning or three-inning guy.
I guess I would maybe use him as like the second pitcher, right? Like start with Will Harris, because I think he's a lefty.
Yeah.
Right? Or no.
No, he's
I'm thinking of Will Smith.
Yeah.
Oh, they don't have a lefty in their bullpen. That's right.
One.
So
they
can't even like stack
matchup,
sort of the like opener thing.
So then, How
do they not have a lefty against the Yankees?
I don't know.
That's kind of.
But they're
crazy.
Also up 3-2, and they were up 3-1. It's like
this is true. I mean, they're still the favorite, but it just is kind of like. It's just been interesting the way the series has unfolded, right?
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Especially with the Astros giving up that first game in Houston, that was like
it looked
quite
like
surprising.
That they were like in trouble.
Yeah, and then game two went 11 innings. Like they could have been like, they easily could have lost both of those games.
That was
but
such
then,
a cool game. That was such a fun game to watch.
Yeah, great ending. Yeah, I don't know. I expected the Astros to look like a much better team.
But I mean, I think that yours. I agree with you in some sense, but also I think maybe we're just selling the Yankees short.
That could be.
Like, I think that we...
And they have won two games without, like, very many of their good hitters, like, going at all. I mean, Gary Sanchez looks really bad. Like, Judge has been okay. Stanton's been hurt. Like...
Yeah.
DJ LeMahieu is, like, their best hitter right now, which is interesting.
Have you looked at his... This dude just hits... he's like Tony Gwynn or something. Yeah. Like, it's so, I knew he won like a batting title, but then I was looking, I was like, he's in the batting title contention for like the last like 4 years or
oh no, I know. it was like a down to the wire between Tim Anderson and LeMahieu. Yeah. So I was checking Yankees box scores every day, being like, fuck, LeMahieu went like he's 3 for 5. Yeah, what the
it's
fuck?
Like, how is he going 2 for 4 every day?
Yeah.
I don't think we underrate the Yankees. I think that it was just so hard to think of the Astros losing, but the Yankees, I mean, we talked about it last week when we were talking about how the Twins maybe had a false 100 wins, but then we were thinking of the Yankees division. We're like, no, that's like a really impressive 100 wins for the Yankees. And it's also tough because the Yankees don't have like the shutdown starter. And then so when you look at the Astros starting rotation, you're just like, well, how are the Yankees going to do this? And but we're seeing how they can hang into games.
I guess what I'm like, just talking about the offense, like they're not winning in the way that I would expect them to.
Or they're not just like, they're not winning like by crushing like 3 2-run home runs.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like if you think, oh, the Yankees have a shot in this series, you think like Judge has hit 2 or 3 home runs.
Yeah.
Sanchez has hit 2 or 3 home runs. Stanton, like same thing. You know what I mean?
Torres. Yeah. They're winning kind of like the same way the Nationals won, because the Nationals didn't have a ton of power against the Cardinals. They scored runs, but they weren't crushing the ball.
Yeah, let's move to that series, because I mean, the way that the Nationals won is pretty simple. Like,
well, the
they
pitching
didn't give the like the Cardinals got like 4 hits in the series, like crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it's like not. I mean, you know, you would never expect that sort of dominating performance. Like,
I mean, you could never expect it, right? Like, it's unreasonable to go into that and be like, yeah, like, we're going to have 2 near no hitters.
Right,
and, like, what another starter is going to strike out 11 guys in 5 innings.
Yeah. But, I mean, you would go in saying, like, the way the Nationals are going to win is they're starting pitching, but you wouldn't say it.
Yeah.
You wouldn't say the way that they're going to do it is what you just said.
Yeah, right.
I mean, I was happy.
Yeah, me too.
It.
I mean, like, I was definitely rooting for the Nationals, both in, like, historical terms of a franchise that has never made the World Series before this, and also just in terms of like
the stinky Cardinals.
The Cardinals are the Cardinals are the Cardinals. I love Scherzer. I like Rendon a lot.
Yeah.
It's been really
Zimmerman
cool. All the Zimmerman,
like, Zimmerman stuff
has been
really,
really
cool.
Like he's been such an underappreciated guy for a long time, like including in my own mind, that it's been cool to see sort of like how beloved he is there and sort of like what he means to that team, and the fact that he's like actually contributing to this team as opposed to being like the sort of like a symbolic veteran, right? Is like he's had some huge hits for them.
He's not, because like CeCe Sabathia for the Yankees is the symbolic veteran,
exactly,
and what he's done now, but like he's not playing that role. Like when Sabathia came in for 1 batter, I think just so he could play. I don't even know why he's on the roster.
I mean, I think like he's a mop-up guy, like.
But even in the broadcast, they were saying like that. Why am I blanking on his name? For the Boone, right? The manager for the
Yankees. Yeah, Aaron Boone
was saying that he's only whatever game, not the one he got hurt, but whatever game he's only available for 1 batter. I was like, why is this guy on the roster if the max he can do is 1?
Oh, I didn't hear that.
Yeah,
I mean, I guess as like a lefty specialist, like if they need someone.
But I guess. Anyway, there was a cool quote for him when he said, like, how do you feel about the fact that you're done? And he was like, I threw until I couldn't throw anymore. It's kind of symbolic. And I was like, oh, that's a great way to look at it.
He also, the best quote that I saw from him, they were like, you know, what's your favorite thing? Like, what are you going to miss the most? And he said, like, walk it out there, 50,000 people all hyped, and they're all waiting on me.
Oh,
which is kind of cool.
Of course, that's the best part. It's an amazing.
It's like
part.
They're all waiting on me to start.
Yeah,
it's like pretty rad.
Yeah, we could talk about it later, but I like CeCe Sabathia, and we can do a retrospective on Sabathia at another time. But
did you see the other thing that I saw that was kind of cool? It was like, I can't remember all the categories, but it was like with his retirement, MLB is losing the active leader in like innings, wins, strikeouts. I think like walks, home run.
Yeah.
Like he's
it was
like
everything.
It was like every category across the board.
Which is, when did he, we don't have to look at it, but like, did he start much before Verlander? Or he must have started before Greinke,
I think he started
in
like 99.
Ooh, holy cow.
I think he's the only player, I mean, maybe him and Cologne are the only, I could be talking out my ass about that. Oh no, 2001.
I think that, Oh, no, you know what? I think I read a thing where it's like, if Cologne doesn't come back this year, this is the first season where no one played in the 90s. Yeah.
So, yeah, Verlander made his debut in 2005, Sabathia's 2001.
It was 4 years before. Yeah, that makes sense more because I was like,
he made two All-Star teams by the time that Verlander debuted.
Sabathia's been around for a long time.
And he's been through some shit, man. I mean, all the like alcoholism stuff that he's dealt with and like came back to be a really good pitcher.
Really had to change how he pitched.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, lost so much velocity, but still was an effective guy. This is not the CC Sabathia podcast, but that that half season that he had with Milwaukee where like he just literally dragged Milwaukee to the playoffs and they had not made the playoffs in 2 decades.
He almost won the Cy Young.
Yeah, in a half season.
From a half season, yeah.
Yeah.
I love when Manny went to the Dodgers and like had MVP talk because he hit like 29 home runs in 2 months or whatever.
Manny would.
Yeah. I love when that happens. I didn't mean to have a whole CC's tangent, but I think that
it would be cool if like one of these games went like 15 innings or something and we saw him like go out there.
He had to like come back in just to, or if like the Yankees were down like 12-1 in the ninth and they just threw him out there, even though there's meatballs anyway.
Yeah.
But that's crazy. He pitched now the thing can be, I graduated high school in 2002. So now the thing is how many players are left from when I was in high school? But
Zimmerman maybe?
No, I think he was like 2000 because he never played for the Expos, and they switched over to the Nationals in 2005.
He was their first draft pick as a National. As a Nationals, so I guess But he debuted like the same year or like the next year or something.
Yeah,
like
he came up really quickly. But I think to go back to the Nationals thing, it was very impressive. But the best thing about this is now they are so set
for
the next series.
They're lined up with like Scherzer game one, like all, you know, Doolittle and Hudson are rested.
Everybody's gonna have rest. Like that's like that's the best thing.
I mean, this is like such a sort of dumb X factor because obviously, like the actual X factor, right, is like. Is if Scherzer pitches lights out, if Scherzer and Strasburg pitch lights out, like that's the X factor. Like that makes the Nationals probably a favorite. But this guy, Tanner Rainey, in the Nationals bullpen has looked like pretty unhittable, like throwing 100.
And they needed.
Yeah, exactly. They needed like a third guy out of the bullpen and he's looked the part. And if he can keep doing that and Hudson and Doolittle can keep pitching well enough, I'll say. Yeah. Like Hudson has not been necessarily like.
Well, yeah,
he hasn't been Aroldis Chapman. Out of the bullpen, but he's like, you know, gotten the job done, I guess.
But that's what they need. They need if Scherzer could pitch into the seventh or Strasburg, and it's 5-2.
Yeah,
you just need Hudson to not give up two runs, and like that's not.
It kind of reminds me. I mean, I think. This maybe is like, there's some ways this comparison doesn't work, but like it reminds me a little bit of Keith Foulke in 2004, where it's just like they just, like Foulke was obviously a very good closer for many years and like he was probably much better than Hudson, but like he was the right guy just because like they needed a guy who wouldn't fold, who would just like do it, who was totally detached from like the history of what it meant to be Red Sox. And like Hudson wasn't even a National until July, right?
Right,
like he's totally detached from like the history of these meltdowns in a way that Doolittle is not. And it feels like that's what they needed is a guy who just like does not have any kind of like psychological history with any of this.
Hudson's even detached from their bad start.
Right. exactly.
He's only been here for like
for
this
the Nationals
great
being
rise
good. Yeah.
of the Nationals to the World Series.
Too bad he's prioritizes his family over
can you believe it?
I can believe
no,
it
I'm just
because
I was just kidding.
Well, I can believe that like there was two assholes who had the opinion that he should have stayed with the Nationals instead of be there for the birth of his kid, and those two assholes got a lot of attention for it.
I'm like I'm always, like I'm in my own life. I'm more of like a personal life is the number one priority.
Oh yeah, of course.
To my detriment, and sometimes probably in my professional life. But it's like, I will never be on the side of whatever. It's like,
no, I think, and I think like 99% yeah. of people would agree with you.
Yeah.
It's like unfortunate, but like very predictable that like, yeah, there was like
yeah.
fucking two assholes on their podcast or on ESPN or whatever said that. And they got a lot of attention just because like everybody wants to be, everybody wants to yell at them, you know?
Yeah.
It's just like,
they
just don't
find it, the angle or the take. Yeah.
Yeah. Just don't give them any fucking mind.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
One of them was David Sampson, the guy who used to run the Marlins, who it's just like, this dude is obviously an incompetent blowhard. Like, why the fuck do we pay attention to anything he says? He ran the fucking Marlins for 15 years or just, whatever.
That's such a funny dig. Because right away, that could be the first thing. You ran the Marlins. Yeah, why were we listening to this guy?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it is
yeah.
true, though.
It's like, what a cynical piece of shit to, like, the way that they ran that team for so long and sort of continued to, but with a new regime.
Speaking of, this is a tangent. Big time tangent. But the,
Let's do it, baby.
The Royals Review, which is the SB Nation blog. Did a ranking of all the Royals general managers. Mm-hmm. How many general managers do you think they've had since their inception 40 or 50 years ago?
Well, Moore's been there a long-ass yeah. time. Allard Baird was there a long-ass time. Those are the only two I can name, yeah. though, but that's probably at least half of the history. So I guess I would say like five, maybe?
They've only had six.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
I would have thought they would have more, but I forgot how long Baird... Baird and Moore are basically this century.
Yeah. Well, no, Baird would have been in the 90s too, right?
Oh, did he start in the 90s?
I don't know.
Well, I meant
not.
This century has been taken up by Baird.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And for some reason, when I read that, and they were like, number six, Alan Baird, because of course.
Yeah.
I was like, six? Are they not doing them all? And I was like, no, they've only had six in 50 years. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I guess. It's impressive in a way. It's also like, you should have fired Allard Baird a lot sooner than you did.
And probably Dayton
probably
Moore.
Probably Dayton Moore also, yeah.
Yeah, Dayton Moore is getting a lot of World Series.
What was his rank on the thing? It must have been two, maybe?
I don't remember.
I mean,
I didn't get all the way through it.
Yeah.
I started the article, and then I think
I mean, that's the crazy thing about winning a World Series is it's sort of like, especially for a team like the Royals or a team like the White Sox that has like very few high points,
yeah.
it's like that automatically grandfathers you into like, oh, I guess he was a good general manager. That's how Kenny Williams is, where
yeah.
it's like, I don't think Kenny was like a great general manager, but he's the one who won a World Series, so like he would automatically be in the top two or three in the history of the White Sox.
Oh, just, yeah. I mean... I think probably, I don't know, like, the Royals history well enough to know who the general manager was, but, like, they made it to, like, three straight ALCSs in the 70s and then,
right.
won, and then went to the World Series in the 80s, and I think that was all the same GM, so I would guess.
And 80, did they, 83 is when they won?
85 is when 80, they won, but 85. I don't know if that's the same, because I don't remember when Schurholz was there before he was at the Braves.
That's right, and Moore was, like, his, well, with the Braves and with the Royals, right, was sort of his
yeah.
protege.
There's like a weird Braves-Royals connection.
Yeah. Not anymore, probably.
No, it's not as much anymore, but they're for like most of the 90s. And like even with like little stuff of like Jermaine Dye playing for both teams or Frank
Coor.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like they were like this weird...
By the way, Frank Coor,
not a bad announcer.
Pretty
yeah.
good. I like him.
I was pretty impressed by him.
Yeah.
Like,
I'm surprised. Isn't that so funny? Because I've also been really, really liking A.J. Pierzynski.
Yeah, Pierzynski is pretty good.
And it's
I'll
like,
give it to you.
That, like, neither of those guys, I think, are bringing to the booth like what you would expect from their reputations, but they're both doing it like pretty insightful, pretty good.
Yeah.
I think one part of it is like guys who were recent players are better at it than guys like Ron Darling or like, you know, like
Ron Darling, I should hate more than I do.
I mean, he's fine, right?
Yeah.
But like, or like Tim McCarver, like these
yeah.
color guys who have been doing
Joe Morgan,
it for like
yeah.
50 fucking years, where it's
yeah.
like baseball is so different than when
yeah.
you played. Like you just don't have a lot of insight about the current game. And on top of that, like, I don't even know who you're referencing most of the time.
But I think it's that they're not trying, because I think Jim Deshaies, who's the Cubs color guy, could be a little old fashioned sometimes, but you can tell he's making an effort to understand
yeah.
the game, and he doesn't make claims. You can tell he doesn't think that the way when he played is the way it should be or is now. And I think sometimes the people like Darling or McCarver or when Morgan was playing, it's almost like they thought it stopped like when they quit.
Right.
And they're not
yeah.
like recognizing that it's not, it's like an admission that baseball might not be your baseball.
For sure. But I also think, like, I mean, I think Steve Stone is similar in that, yeah, like, he understands the analytics and maybe doesn't agree with all of them 100%, but is not, like, dismissive in any way. But, like, still there is something about, even as much as I like Stone and Benetti as a pairing, like, there's something about Steve Stone when he references, like, Jim Palmer or, like, you know, guys he played with, guys he played against, where it's like, I didn't see those guys play. Like, it the only ones that I know even are the Hall of Famers that you're mentioning. So when you, like, mention, like, whoever, like, I can't even pull a name, but it's like that, that there's no contextual meaning to that versus, like, when Pierzynski's like, oh, this reminds me of, like, when I played against Pujols. It's like, oh, yeah, of course.
But then you got to think, though, too, though, like, Pujols is still playing, so that's, like, not, but, like, so that's a good example. But, you know, even if it's, like, familiar to us when you're like, oh, I remember going against Bobby Bonilla.
Yeah.
Like, there are 20-year-olds who are like, what?
Yeah, right.
Or, like, already.
No, I mean, it's obviously, like, you're never going to be completely.
But you are right. More recent, I think, has been more helpful. Also, speaking of Benetti, man, that dude should be the next Joe Buck.
Yeah, I mean,
like,
he's
I think
so
I texted
good, right?
you guys that, like, and I know he's been on the podcast, so it's not like, but I was listening because I like watching those analytics broadcasts.
Oh yeah, me too. For the wild card game.
Yeah,
it was awesome.
And I was just listening to Benetti. I was like, this dude's ready. Like, he's so good, and he's so good at being like a national. You know what? Like, I think there's a difference between being a good for your team broadcaster and being good at being able to call a game where you aren't showing any bias at all.
Yeah. It's really interesting listening to him in the national games versus, like, listening to him so often in White Sox games and sort of the, like, subtle differences in how he approaches things. And I think, like, in some ways, actually, he is better at national games. Like, I think
interesting.
I mean, he's really good on the White Sox, and I really like him, but I think, like, it's not even a criticism, really, but he has, like, a really fucking goofy, like, dad sense of humor that, like, sort of, I think some people are like, shut the fuck up.
And
it doesn't bother me that much, but, like, I can also get it a little bit. Why, like, when he's, like, chuckling at his own jokes and stuff, like, I can see how it rubs people the wrong way, even though I don't really mind it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I can see it. Len and JD are both, like, master dad the Cubs broadcast.
Yeah.
And
I mean, I guess, like, almost everybody is actually a dad.
Well, that's true,
who does these games. Benetti is not, but...
It is weird, though, because Len does Fox games sometimes. And especially, have you ever heard Benetti call a White Sox game for a national broadcast?
No.
Because Casper sometimes has to do
like
Cubs
Fox
games for Fox.
Doesn't
with
he
like
only
John
do that?
Smoltz. Maybe
I
it's
think
only because
he's
only
just
there.
National games that he does.
But it's
Cubs
definitely.
Games.
But he's not there with JD, and he's there with maybe not Smoltz, but like a national color guy or not a Cubs color guy. And it's so weird. It is weird to hear the difference.
Yeah. You just got to approach it a little bit differently, for sure.
But that's, I don't know, testament to how good they are. But, I really impressed with Benetti. I also like those because the other two people in there, who is it, Rivera and, or who's in there with Benetti on
Mike
the...
Mike Petriello and Eduardo Perez.
Or Perez, yeah.
Perez is really good as an ex-player, too, who's, like, super into, like, the analytics side of it and stuff like that.
But you can tell they're also just, like, huge nerds. Like, they're not at, like, broadcasting.
Yeah,
like
Petriello,
the broadcast
like, is very raw as a broadcaster,
but it's like,
even though he does, like he does MLB,
he's on
MLB
TV,
Network games and stuff like
he
that,
he doesn't feel uncomfortable on TV,
but he doesn't have the
persona.
Polish.
Yeah, and but I kind of like that, too, because I was like, yeah, maybe I just want to listen. Like, that's what we're doing now. You just want to listen to people who fucking like baseball talk about baseball.
Yeah, and he's, like, so insightful and smart about the, like, specific, like, StatCast and analytic things.
Him and... yeah.
He incorporates it very naturally into, like,
you
know, like, sort of Benetti will, like, call what happened, and then Petriello will, like, expand on it in terms of, like, oh, that was one of the hardest hit balls that we've seen, and that increases the expected batting average or whatever.
And then, like, I think Benetti knows how to spin that if it gets too in the weeds.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a really impressive
broadcast.
And then
Perez just has a weird-ass voice.
He does have a weird voice, but I love it. I love it, and I love when they predict shit, and then it
happens.
Because I like predicting stuff, too, and, like, so it's really fun. It's helping me, I think.
Yeah, for sure. They're very enlightening broadcasts. Yeah. No,
okay.
I'm I saw a headline that they might rejigger the Sunday Night Baseball booth on ESPN, and I think Benetti would be like an awesome choice if they do.
Yeah, I mean, Buck's like, what, 45, so he's not going anywhere soon?
No, but he's like, older than that. He's got to be in his 50s at least.
I
know
he
started
wrong.
Young, but
he was like in his
20s. So long.
Yeah, he has been doing it for 25 years, so you're probably right.
Going back.
Where were we on the Nationals?
Going back. Just, I guess let's put it this way. Do you like the Nationals over either American League team?
I think that if I was like, I think it, yeah, he just turned 50, Joe Buck.
Wow, that's younger than I thought.
Yeah. I think that I would be hard pressed to pick the Nationals over the Astros, but I think they could beat, I mean, once the Nationals beat the Dodgers, I don't think that there's any team they can't beat.
Yeah.
Like I don't think the Dodgers are so much, I don't think the Astros are so, I don't think anybody thinks the Astros are so much better than the Dodgers. That, I mean, I guess they match up differently, but I mean, I don't even know how comfortable I would take Cole's clearly the best pitcher of the teams left, but if Scherzer's on, like,
best.
And then at this point, Verlander and Strasburg are neck and neck, probably. Maybe you would take Strasburg, and then I'd take Corbin over Greinke still, I think, or how's Greinke's looked lately, not maybe overall. So, like, I think I'd still pick the Astros. Nationals-Yankees, I think, would be a hell of a series, and I think I would maybe even pick the Nationals. Like, again, they beat the Dodgers.
Yeah.
And so it's like, a lot of people seem to dismiss them a little bit. I'm like, how can you?
Right, yeah. the way they even played going into the playoffs was like they were, the last 2 months of the season, they were one of the best teams in the majors, and you can't discount it. I do wonder... I guess the thing that I always question is, like, with the DH, you know, I mean, Alvarez has not been hitting well, and Stanton has only been a bit better, but, like, who is the Nationals DH? Like, that is always such a disadvantage for National League teams of, like, you know, I guess maybe you put Kendrick there and then you have an upgrade defensively at second base, or you put Zimmerman there or Matt Adams. Like, I just... Whoever they put there is not going to be as good on paper as Giancarlo Stanton or Yordan Alvarez.
That is true, yeah. But it'll still be better than Max Scherzer.
Well, yeah, of course. But like,
it is relative to the team you're playing. So if you're just going position by position.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly.
They're going to take an L there. But if it is, yeah, but then they're losing. Yeah, I don't know who it'll be because I don't think, yeah.
I mean,
it's not, you're right. The DH is on both the Yankees.
Right. And I think, like, it's also in just even more general terms, like, the Nationals don't have the same offensive depth that either the Astros or the Yankees do. Like, you know, high end talent, like, Anthony Rendon can match up with anybody. But, like, when, and Juan Soto can obviously match up with anybody, but like as good as Howie Kendrick has been this year in the playoffs, he is not Aaron Judge, right?
Yeah, no.
He is not whoever the third best hitter is in the Yankees or Astros lineups.
I mean, you have Correa batting low in the order
for
the Astros, which in case he hasn't been that great this year. I mean, he hasn't been as great as he should be or what everyone thinks he is. But there's no one batting seventh for the Nationals. That's Carlos Correa.
Yeah, or George Springer, right? Like, Trey Turner has been good, but he does not have the all-around offensive skills that George Springer has, or that Jose Altuve has, or that Alex Bregman has. You know what I mean? Like, it's just...
Bregman and Rendon are basically...
Right, those, sure.
They cancel each other out. But then now, I mean, Altuve and Soto, you're, like, still looking at, like, who do you... like?
Right.
Anyway, I think the Astros are better than the Nationals, and I would probably pick the Astros. I don't know. I think that they would be good. I don't think this is like a. Someone in a Slack that we were in was talking about this feels like the Rockies going into 2007.
Yeah.
But I think the Rockies were playing over their head, and then they ran into like a really great Red Sox team.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that this is the case. I think the Nationals are really good and can match up.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they are really good. I don't think they have the upside of either the Yankees or the Astros, but I also don't think... I think the Nationals have been playing like almost as well as they possibly could, and I don't think that's true of the Astros or the Yankees. So it's just kind of like a matter of like can the Astros and the Yankees build on that upside, or like reach that upside? Will whoever makes it through sort of be a little bit battered and bruised from this longer series that they're playing in?
Yeah, I mean, this, like,
it would be very good for the Nationals if the Yankees win today.
It would be very good.
One way or another, whoever they're facing, it would be very good for them.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. This Yankees win yesterday just, like, helps the Nationals, like, every step of the way. And so that's why, I don't know. I mean, but they could also get swept. Like, I could see anything happening. Well, obviously, it's the playoffs, but...
If you had $1 million and you had to put $1 million on one of the three teams winning the World Series,
I had to pick a team.
Yeah,
I'd pick the Astros.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't know. Like, they're up 3-2. They're better than the Nationals on paper.
Mm-hmm.
And like, they're up. Yeah, the Nationals or the Astros upside. I feel like it would be hard for the Nationals to win three games, let alone four, if the Astros are playing at even like 95%.
Clicking on all cylinders. Yeah.
And then the Nationals also had to continue. And right now they're playing, I would say, above the 90th percentile of their ability.
They have been. They've been playing, extremely.
And so they had to keep that up and hope. Yeah, like you said. So I put the money on the Astros, but it wouldn't
also
be shocking.
Like, I know this is such a surface level, like, meaningless observation / analysis, but Dave Martinez just looks like he is fucking ill every time that I see him on TV. Like, he's got a face that is like troubled no matter what is happening.
I think there is something to be said for Hinch versus Martinez, for sure.
Yeah,
like, because Hinch is like stone cold. And so
I'm just like, is everything okay, dude? Like, things are going well for you. Why are you like,
I think it's
holding
like,
in like liquid poop and like,
I don't know. Haven't you ever been in those situations where you're like killing it and you're like, this is gonna end at any point?
I guess,
an improv show or something. It's like move away from this whole
thing
toppling.
Well, that's how I generally feel about my life.
I feel like that way driving a car. Like, oh, I haven't made any weird moves today. Can I keep up this perfect streak of not making a bad lane change?
I think we're in agreement that, like, the Nationals have a chance, but it just is really hard to predict. Like, both the ALCS and the World Series could go any way right now.
Yeah. I think, I don't know. I mean, the Dodgers, you know, like,
you think the Dodgers still have a chance?
I think the Dodgers might be able to pull it off. No. I'm just trying to, maybe this is always, like, you always want, like, a 7-game series because those are fun.
Yeah.
But, like, I think, like, Astros-Dodgers, you wanted it a little more. Like, it was, like, the thought of seeing those two teams play each other for 7 games was a little, and, like, Indians-Cubs was probably the same way. I think that Nationals-Astros is one of those series where it's, like, you're going to want to see this as many times as possible.
Or Yankees.
I think we're set up for like a very exciting, like, I think Cardinals Yankees, we would have been like, let's just get this over with.
Yeah. I mean, definitely will be a more fun World Series than with the Nationals than with the Cardinals or the Dodgers or the Braves, I think.
Yeah. And so I think that regardless, we're set up for a series where I'm going to want the Nationals to win regardless, but it's going to feel like, oh, like, I really want the drama of a game six or a game seven in this series,
which I think
is great, good for baseball.
Yeah, fingers crossed, knock on wood, we will we'll see it. Before we end the show, let's talk about Joe Maddon really quick being hired as the manager of the Angels. And before we started recording, we were both talking about a Ringer article that we read by Michael Bauman, who, and I've seen this brought up, seen and heard this brought up elsewhere, where, you know, is Joe Maddon the right manager for the Angels of this moment? Like, it makes a lot of sense for him to go back because he was an Angels farmhand. He was an Angels bench coach.
He was there for 31 years.
So in that sense, it makes a ton of sense. However, the Angels are still dealing with the death of Tyler Skaggs, which is obviously very tragic, and it's gotten a lot more complicated because he had been getting opiates from members of the Angels organization. The family has retained some lawyers. And like, this also seems like potentially the tip of the iceberg in revealing sort of an opiates issue across Major League Baseball, even maybe, with, you know, potentially multiple members of the Angels who have been using, and you would assume if that's the case in one clubhouse, it might be the case in other clubhouses. And what Michael Bauman pointed out was that Joe Maddon, as good of a manager he is in terms of like relating to players and setting a culture, the one time that he had to deal with, let's say, extracurricular issues was with Addison Russell and the domestic violence issue, and he handled it kind of poorly.
Yeah, he didn't. I mean, yeah, it's very safe to say he did not handle it.
And
well.
So I'm just curious, as you know, as a Cubs fan who saw that all that happen a little bit more intimately than maybe I was aware of, what you think? Like, is it a different issue that he's more equipped to handle, or do you think, like, having gone through that, like, has he indicated at all, like, that he has regrets about how he handled that?
I mean, he kind of tried to walk, not like walk back how he handled it, but I mean, he kind of just was like, I don't think he ever admitted, and he never, like, corrected himself with how he handled the Addison Russell thing, but and I think, like, he acknowledges that he didn't. You know, like,
it could have been better. I mean, like, but so specifically, he sort of his approach was like to brush it off a little bit.
Well,
right?
His whole thing was like, I'm not going to read what she said. I'm going to wait for all the facts to come out.
Right.
And he said, I'm not going to read her post because I need to hear both sides of the story, which is not at all the right way to handle that. Like,
right. For one thing, if you want to hear both sides,
you
got to
read
story,
one
you
side.
You got to read.
Yeah. And he was like, I need the other side to come out and then I'll have both of them. It was like, I'm paraphrasing, but like it was like,
right.
and then kind of brush it off and say, let's talk about baseball until then. So I don't think he handled it well. I have long thought that Joe Maddon is a great manager for when things are going well and does not know exactly how to right a sinking ship. And I think that's why he's not with the Cubs anymore. I don't think he's bad. I don't think he's like Mike Matheny,
right?
Like where he's like actively making it worse. I think his whole thing is like, how do I keep players interested when things are going well and then we have dips? But then when it's truly a situation, I don't think that that's his strong suit. Last year he did pretty well when the Cubs had like those like 30 games in a row or 28 games in a row without an off day. Like, he navigated that pretty well, but it's not like they played well. They just like got through it better than they could have. But so I've thought that about Maddon for a while, but I think domestic abuse is different than an opioid addiction. I think that it's because there's no real necessary, the bad guy is the drugs,
right?
Or like you can make the bad guy the drugs instead of your player,
right?
And it's like not a thorny. I think it's a, they're both terrible issues. I think that he might navigate this better just because it's maybe a little, the course is a little easier to navigate. I could be wrong. Like, it's a, like, and a lot of is coming out. And like you said, the fact that I think Bauman pointed out, like, it was cocaine, then it was steroids, and now it might be opioids.
Mm-hmm.
And like, he could screw this up really bad because God knows everyone screwed up the cocaine and steroids things yeah, at the top. I do also think that Maddon, I don't like the whole Cubs organization handled the Russell thing poorly.
Yeah.
It's not like Theo and the Ricketts family nailed it and then Maddon fucked up.
Right.
And so like if the Angels organization has something in place, I think Maddon is very smart. I think everyone agrees on that. He can, if the organization handles it correctly, I think Maddon will also handle it correctly. If that, you know what
yeah,
I mean?
That,
like,
that makes sense.
Cause
I
think
like,
Maddon probably handled it poorly. Cause I think probably he heard from Ricketts and Theo about what he can't say. And
right.
So Maddon like,
yeah, I guess that makes sense. I guess like if I were the Angels organization or I guess more specifically an Angels fan, I would want a little more confidence that the guy that was taking over would handle things correctly regardless of circumstance, as opposed to like the whatever messaging
exactly
is being handed down by Artie Moreno and the Angels front office. Because like clearly members of the Angels front office are directly linked to this at this point. Not on the baseball operations side yet, but like
but that puts Maddon in a sticky situation now because like basically he's walking into a situation where he can't piss off his new bosses.
Yeah. I guess it,
like is
guess
it better or worse to have someone from outside the organization?
I think it's probably better just because like he doesn't have to protect anyone in this or I mean he didn't have to protect Russell obviously, but he had a personal relationship with Russell in which it felt like probably you know, he had some responsibility.
Which is his big strong suit is having relations with players. Like, that's like what he's known for.
And that's both a pro and a con in this situation, right? Where, like, in dealing with Skaggs in particular, especially because by all accounts he was so beloved and a clubhouse leader, like going in there as the new guy who doesn't know him when he's obviously still going to be kind of a figure that is important to a lot of people in that clubhouse is maybe a little bit fraught. However, on the other side of it, like, you know, whoever, whatever sort of team employees and whatever other players have been, were involved or will come to find out were involved, he doesn't have any loyalty to those guys and can sort of like sympathize, but also maybe have a little bit of a stronger point of view than like, oh, well, let's just wait to see what the information is or like, let's protect.
Like, I know Edison Russell, he's a good guy.
Yeah, exactly.
I do think like, so had Tyler Skaggs died, not related to an overdose, like if he would have died in a car crash or something, I think Madden is a good guy to be the leader of a clubhouse who is still dealing with that, even if he doesn't know him. I think that's a good, I think that's a good role for Madden to be able to use that energy. And I think that he's, that's like one of his strengths. So I think it gets thorny because we're dealing with the fact that like players in that clubhouse or personnel in who he's now working with might be very guilty in contributing to the death. And I don't, I don't know how Madden. So I think like just like the death dealing with someone who died part like might play into Madden's strength.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm trivializing this and I don't mean to, but I think it like,
no, I understand what you're saying.
I think that that kind of thing is what Madden's good at, is like bringing a clubhouse together, using that energy, negative or weird or whatever it is, from having to get over a beloved teammate's death into like, how can we translate that into being a good team on the field, which is ultimately his job.
And like building and personal relationships between the players, like community supporting them and making sure they feel supported.
Yeah, and being there if like someone's having a hard time and they need to talk. Like, I think that's what I know of Madden off the field being what you partly what you hire him for.
Mm-hmm.
It does get thorny when you start having, but like, who would be good at, like, this opioid thing is so
like,
new.
In a perfect world, like, this is so far outside the scope of managerial duties, right? Like, it's not, in any other job, it is not up to the manager of, like at either of our jobs, right? It's not up to the manager.
Yeah, there'd be,
like
a person hired specifically to come talk about
exactly.
that. And I'm sure that the Angels are also doing that, too, but, like,
I would hope so.
I don't know. I think that Bauman, I would recommend everyone read it because I think it brings up good points. And I don't know if Joe Madden's going to navigate this. Hopefully he learned from his mistakes. It seems like he's the type of guy that would at least, he's reflective. Everyone certainly knows that he's reflective. So I don't know.
I guess the other thing is like, aside from all that, it's a little bit curious. It makes sense in the same way that Madden chose this job because of his history with the Angels organization, and the same way it makes sense that they chose him. But like, he would have had other opportunities like he that don't require like stepping in kind of such a fraught situation, right?
True.
It's like you get hired by the Padres or by the Pirates or by like any other organization that would have loved to have Joe Madden, and he's just a baseball manager. So it's like kind of interesting that he specifically decided like, yes, this is the job that I want.
I'll take this. It's going to be very interesting to see how it unfolds. I mean, it would be regardless if it was Madden or not Madden, but I think just because everyone, like, Joe Madden is what, one of the top three most famous managers in baseball?
Oh yeah.
Or maybe the,
maybe
most,
the
famous.
Most famous. Yeah.
And then also, I've been also watching him very closely for a while now, so it's going to be,
Well, hopefully, you know, hopefully he handles it well, both in terms of the public-facing side of it, and, like, the Angels organization handles it well in terms of, like, getting help to the people who need it, and it's not sort of, like, punitive punishment to people. Like, like, that's what I'm worried about.
I think that's
as
what
baseball
a lot of people
as
worried
a whole
about.
Is just, like, you know, how... Yeah,
I think Bauman used the word draconian.
Yeah. Exactly. it's like, you could easily see baseball going down that road, and that would be a mistake,
just,
I think.
I think this is definitely a time. I think, like, hopefully we learn a lesson from, like, Sabathia. I think that was a real... Like, going back to him, like, I think the fact that instead of any sort of punishment or weird thing. And I know people feel differently about alcohol, but I think that was like a really great story for everyone, for Sabathia to come out and say, I have a problem, I'm getting help.
Yeah.
Like, I want to come out on the other end. Like,
yeah. Or like, even like, if you look back, well, on the other side of the spectrum, it's like Josh Hamilton, right? Is like the most famous example of all of this. Yeah. And like, I don't know in retrospect that suspending the dude for like 2 years or whatever
and making him completely start over, basically.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know that that was the right.
No, I don't. Yeah. So I think we have two good examples of like letting Sabathia deal with it on his own. And again, I know that the general attitude about alcohol is way different than drugs. And there's like a knee jerk for a lot of people to be like, you use drugs, fuck you.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Which is not a point of view I subscribe to.
Yeah, right.
But I hope you're right. And I hope that it isn't just like, let's crack down. And but then now Madden's in that thorny situation too, where I think this is different too, because you got to stand up for your guys until we know that they're, like, you know what I mean? Like, if someone gets accused on the team of providing opioids, that's going to be the Addison Russell direct parallel.
Right.
But it's one thing if it's like front office guys or trainers, because Madden, I think, wouldn't be so wrong to be like, the Angels are dealing with that in Major League Baseball. We need to focus on the game.
Yeah, right. That is not his job.
That's like, not his job.
His job
yeah.
is to be there for players who need help.
Exactly.
Or guidance or whatever kind of like disciplinary action needs to be taken versus like, yeah, it's so ownership think, and it's,
yeah.
you know, president of the Angels who would be dealing with the sort of other side.
So I feel like this is different than the Russell thing in that sense of like deflection sometimes might be the best move. And again, but if it's a player
circled away,
or if it's his hitting coach, if he keeps someone over, then he does need to talk about it.
Yeah.
And that's where you hope he does it in a way.
Just be like, it's all Brad Ausmus's fault. Brad Ausmus is actually a kingpin.
Just throw Ausmus way under the bus.
You should go to Brad Ausmus's Colombian opioid ranch.
What if he says that and then it turns out that Ausmus has been this kingpin since he's been playing?
Yeah, the next, well, I mean, Esteban Loaiza, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's been a few guys, I can't remember who it was recently, but there have been a couple guys who have been like connected with like
or
massive drug smuggling or operations.
Or that was like a crazy deeper than that.
That was like he set a guy on fire or something.
Yeah, he was.
Good God. Well, we're off the rails. I mean, obviously this will be, I think, a story that will continue to evolve over the off season and into spring training even. So
the interesting flip side is I think almost everybody that isn't in the AL West is rooting for Madden and the Angels because everyone wants to see Mike Trout in the playoffs.
Yeah, for sure.
So the flip side of this is like everyone wants Madden to handle this correctly. It'll be very interesting to watch, but everyone else is like now, like, please let this be good for the Angels.
Yeah. And they're also one of the favorites to sign Gerrit Cole, I think.
Right.
He's from Southern California. Yeah. They obviously have a huge hole and have a history of giving out big contracts. So
a coal hole.
And who knows whether kind of all this stuff will be impactful on the way they go about their off season. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot to
it's
it, but like
a lot of open questions.
I think like the fun part of this is like, can this turn the Angels around? Which again, I feel like pretty much everyone in baseball wants the Angels to do well.
Right.
As long as they have Trout.
Yeah. Well, with that, I think we'll be back most likely after the World Series to,
after the whole World Series. Okay.
I'm just guessing. Maybe we'll be back mid-World Series. Yeah. Who knows when we're back? We have not figured it out, I guess, is the real answer to that.
Oh, yeah. Production meeting.
But thank you guys for listening to this episode, and please do look out for the next episode whenever it comes. Thanks again to Boardwalk Audio and to Off the Bench Baseball.com for their support, to producer Joe for the theme song, and Moonbounce for the outro music. And I'm excited for the World Series. It should be a good one. Regardless of who makes it.
It's going to be fun.
So we will we'll talk about it next time.
This has been a Boardwalk Audio podcast. For more information and shows, visit boardwalkaudio.com. Don't forget to rate and subscribe now.